Amazon Prime Day is coming, and it's so special, we brought out the confetti cannons. What's Prime Day? It's a day with more deals than Black Friday, exclusively for Amazon Prime members. Amazon Prime members can save big on thousands of amazing items, all on Prime Day. Not a Prime member? There's still time to sign up. Go to Amazon.com right now. Don't miss it. Prime Day is one day only, July 15th. I'm going to need a lot more confetti, so you know.
Welcome to Breakthrough Radio, a global business radio show where smarter strategies deliver breakthrough results by adding an entrepreneurial touch driving today's profits. Now, get ready for three powerful breakthrough segments with Michelle Price.
Welcome to Breakthrough Radio. This is Michelle Price here coming to you from the third coast of Houston, Texas today. And on Breakthrough Radio, we are celebrating 7 years of talking about mastering the inner and outer game of business. It is the first Monday of the month and we have a surprise for you. Today, instead of our regular timeline, Don Cooper and Jeff Shuey have agreed for us to hold a conversation with the three of us all at the same time. Because we're seeing huge shifts in how technology, robotics, automation is having on our business world. Now, where you are used to getting a sales tip at the top of the show and then a 60-minute deep dive interview followed by a 20-minute segment on Jeff and how technology is showing up in business, we're going to bring it to you a little different today. I want to thank you for coming to listen to Breakthrough Radio, and if it's your first visit, please make sure you thank the person who told you about us. Here's the scoop. You are going to want to listen without distraction, and that's why you only need to write down one URL today. It's www.whoismichellepryce.com. Again, that's whoismichellepryce.com. Remember, this Michelle is spelled with one L. I'm going to ask you, have you gotten our irresistible tweets that increase your business report? Make sure you do. Twitter is a huge traffic driver for Breakthrough Radio. And being one of the most misunderstood of the social media platforms, my Twitter report's designed to help you wrap your brain around using Twitter more effectively and, of course, for breakthrough results. Stop wasting time making mistakes that don't serve your business or yourself. It's in the header on each and every page of the website. And, you know, being told by our listeners, and we love it when our listeners connect with us and talk to us. So they've told us that we have shown them we're really hyper-conscious of what their needs are. We find out by putting everything together in a framing post each week, because very early on, listeners said, would you stop throwing all those URLs at me? I'm listening to you, but I'm not stopping to write things down. We got it. So each week, anytime we talk about something, we make sure we go back to that framing post, put a link into any of those resources there for you. That way you've got one handy place to connect with either Don, Jeff, or myself, as well as the conversations from that day. So make sure you do visit and connect with each one of us. Yeah, I'm going to ask you that thing again. Do that thing you do. Okay, so having fun thinking of music at the same time. Do more than follow us. Reach out. Truly connect. Ask us questions. Engage us in conversation. And, of course, when it makes sense for your business, hire us. Now, remember, we can share your events, whether they're local, like we talk about what's going on here in the entrepreneurial backyard of Houston, as well as international, because we have listeners all over the world in the UK, Germany, South Africa, Australia, Brazil, just to name a few. Tell us what is happening in your city, because we serve a dynamic audience, global listeners, national listeners, regional listeners, and of course local listeners with our business radio show. That means we can share what you're doing and spread it around the world and down the street effectively. Now, in our last episode, we learned from Jason Verby how digital marketing is giving you, your marketing, and your sales teams accountability that you hadn't had before, giving you data that lets you make smarter business decisions. A company that's been a great example of how to use data to make smarter decisions is Ford. How will you follow Ford's lead and be clear in what, when, and where you deliver your products and your services for your customers. You know, Ford's mastered empowering their people internally so that they're using data to give customers what they want. Imagine that. How can you make sure to give your customers what they want today, whether it's 10 or 10,000? The key question for you to ask is, how are you using forward-thinking solutions to find and deliver smarter products and services for your ideal prospects and customers? There's your sweet spot. And we can help you develop that strategy for your business. We're masters at using digital marketing to align with your business goals, needs, and objectives in order for you to make the same smarter decisions Ford makes now. So before we start up our interview, remember, we appreciate it when you share today's show by going to www.whoismichellepryce.com. Again, whoismichellepryce.com. Now for our featured interview today on Breakthrough Radio, brought to you by Ford Motor Company, let me bring on Don and Jeff. You know, it's kind of fun when we do these special editions, guys.
Good morning, Michelle. Yeah, it definitely is.
True.
And I understand Jeff is picking blackberries over on the West Coast and running from bears.
No, blueberries. Blackberries are out in the forest. Blueberries are in my yard.
Ah, gotcha. You know, one of the things I found really interesting as we were talking about this topic this weekend is this morning we have a local entrepreneur that actually came out of the corporate world, Russ Comfer, and he's doing some really cool things, some pretty leading edge things in, I guess you would call, the environmental and energy space. And I had kind of gone back and forth with him on Facebook asking him about something that he had posted this morning. And the question I asked him, I think toward the very end of our conversation, is, what do you think it's going to take for us to really be able to move forward as a people, you know, like we talked about at the top of the show, making smarter decisions, especially in that energy and environmental space? And he said, I literally copy and pasted it here, so I would not put any words in his mouth that weren't his. He said, I think there are plenty of people like me. They're just all held back from their potential by captive systems that keep human ingenuity in tiny, well-ordered boxes. I almost know one solution to that, but it's too hard for most people to control to support, in effect, giving it up. But in today's age, with the unbounded knowledge sharing and much more liquid capital, without waiting for big institutions to create a safe place for change, I think we simply need more people to gut it up and become entrepreneurs. Entrepreneurship is simply about letting human potential out of its cage. End of short rant, he says. What do you guys think about that? Since we're talking about how technology, automation, and robotics is really changing the landscape for business, and some businesses are crumbling and new ones are being born and thriving.
Jeff, you want to go first, or shall I?
Go ahead, Don.
Well, I agree 100% with what he said, because change tends to come faster from smaller organizations and from individuals than from large institutions. The bigger any organization gets, the more resistant it is to change, and thus the slower it is to change. The bigger any group gets, the more it likes to preserve the status quo. So that kind of disruption and change is going to come from individuals who are outside the organization very often. So I agree that entrepreneurship is one of the primary driving forces in our markets and in our society.
Well, you know, one of the things I find frustrating and challenging about that, I know he mentioned in there that that there's liquid capital now, but because I'm so active in the startup community, it's not as liquid as we'd like it to be. And a lot of times partnering with large organizations because they have the deep pockets to help move things forward has always been an interesting step that a lot of entrepreneurs have had to take. What do you think about that, Jeff?
I think the idea of having liquid capital, I mean, I think capital is definitely more liquid than it used to be. I don't think we can go out and pick money off a tree like my blueberries on my bush out in front of my house, but I do think capital is, I don't want to say easy to get. It's still tough. I mean, there's alpha rounds and certainly beta rounds and final seed rounds. It's still hard, but I do think capital is easier to find now. But I think in another sense, kind of parroting what Don said, there's not as much of an impediment to do startups these days. Back in the 50s, 60s, 70s, maybe even into the 80s, again, as Don said, there was a lot of momentum and inertia to get past, and it was a lot easier to kill an idea than to launch something new. So I think capital markets have adjusted and adapted, and we now have things, the term angel investors, I know we've talked about on this show a lot, but some people don't necessarily know what they are. But there are angel investors out there that put in relatively small sums to kind of seed to get something going, to seed and kick something off and get it going. The reality is we don't see, at least I don't see, millions of dollars being thrown at things on a regular basis. But, of course, there are times. I mean, there's lots of companies like Snapchat and Twitter that took relatively sizable investments up front, and they've done pretty well. I mean, it depends on how you slice and dice pretty well. But I think to answer your question, capital is out there, not in massive sums, but it is out there. And for the right plan, positioned correctly, without a bunch of fluff and hyperbole, people will invest. And I am seeing that happen more and more, not just up here in Seattle, but in different parts of the world too.
One of the things that I'm wondering as I'm listening to both of you is, do you think that we are in a time, yes, we're seeing forward movement in that, but do you think we're in a time where it's not going to be as, what's the word I'm looking for? Daniel will get a big kick out of this because we're giving a presentation Thursday that talks about why sometimes words don't come to you. Because big business has always been the ones who can, like, push their weight around as well as lead innovation because of all the resources they've had. Are we finally in a space where smaller businesses are going to be able to have much more impact than they have had in the past? And I'm also going to state real quickly that what I'm hearing through my earbud is kind of going in and out. So while you answer this, Don, I'm going to try to plug in a new set of earbuds.
Okay. I think small businesses and entrepreneurs have always been the driving engine of our economy and have always been the primary leaders behind innovation. And you mentioned Ford earlier. Well, Lord knows Henry Ford was a small business owner at first. Virtually every large company started as a small company at some point. So we're going to see that continually. I think to Jeff's point earlier, that's actually getting easier than ever before because there's more access to capital. In addition to the traditional investors, you now have crowdfunding sources like Kickstarter and others that allow anybody with an idea to throw that idea out there to the masses and see if it can support. And that's never been possible before. The old model was if you had an idea, you had to find somebody that would believe in it enough to back it and then try to figure out how to make it happen. And it was all one big bet that could succeed or fail. Now you can go out with your idea into a crowdfunding source and immediately get feedback as to whether or not that idea is marketable, because the more people who invest in it, the more people who want to buy it. So immediately you've got feedback on to how sellable your idea is, and that's creating more and more risk takers because you're reducing the amount of risk necessary to take in order to launch a new idea. So I think there's going to continue to be driving innovation from small businesses, and a lot of large businesses are looking to snap up those businesses to keep themselves competitive. We see that with Google and Microsoft and Apple buying up companies all over the place because they're innovating faster than they are.
Well, Jeff, would you agree? Yeah, it's interesting you would bring that up, because that's one of the other strategies that I'm noticing, is that big companies don't necessarily move quick enough to innovate, and some of them are smart enough to bring innovators internally and then not constrict them with what they need to do, and then others really fail at that. They're bringing them internally, and it just turns into the same mess they already had. But a lot of bigger businesses are just buying smaller businesses, but for one or two reasons, though. Sometimes they're buying it to keep them from getting that innovation on the market so they can squash it, and other times they're buying it to leverage it and to be able to do, you know, what they could that a smaller company couldn't. When does that really serve us, though, Jeff?
Well, I think Don, again, kind of hit the nail on the head. A couple of points. One was the innovation certainly happens faster, and things like Kickstarter allow people to try things out. So I think two things, the two I's, I guess, it's the innovation and the iteration. So I think people are able to kick stuff off, try it. And one of the, I haven't seen it on a grand scale, but maybe, I don't know, 20 or 25% of people seem to think that every idea, and this is an oversimplification, but seem to think that every idea should be the next Facebook or Google or Microsoft or whatever, and that some Kickstarter that they put $25 in should turn into the next $1 billion investment. And I do see, I think there's a mentality of investors and there's a mentality of entrepreneurs, and they don't necessarily always go together, and I think we all know that. Where investors predominantly are going to be somewhat cautious, but we're getting these people on the fringes that get access, or I should say can have access or allowed access through things like Kickstarter to throw money at things and find out if they'll work. And I think it's a little bit like, maybe not exactly like going to Vegas, but it's like investing in anything, whether you're going to invest in a mutual fund or a 401k or something, you should analyze the risks and returns and have a realistic expectation for return. But what I do see a lot, more often than I would like to, is people have these sort of grandiose ideas that if they put in $25 or $125 into some Kickstarter idea, that, you know, by the end of the week, they're going to be multimillionaires. And I throw that out there not as a kind of a doom and gloom thing, but as a reality check, that entrepreneurs are always sort of pushing the envelope. They're innovating, they're trying things. And I mean, like most entrepreneurs, you iterate pretty fast. And you want to say, whether you're building software or building some hardware thing, you want to try different things. And I think back to the point that Don made, I think you made it too, Michelle, is that corporations are almost built to keep their own business going. And if you listen to what Drucker said, a business is built to make a profit. That's what they're there for. They're built and designed to optimize, in theory, optimize is a loose term, but to optimize their own efficiencies to keep their own business going, and to a lesser extent to allow new things to come in. And back to what Don said, that inertia is very tough to get past. And I know it was a long answer to a relatively short question, but I think capital is out there. There are somewhat risk-averse and somewhat not very evaluative people that make some investments and assume they're going to turn out something really big. The only downside of that, the upside of that, there's cash available. So that's that liquid capital. The downside of that is you might lose those people forever, which is actually probably a good thing.
Well, I mean, I totally get it. There's a lot of people who aren't sophisticated enough to understand the challenges that are involved whenever you're creating a new product, and they'll have unrealistic expectations. It's a time where people have an opportunity to really learn a little bit more. One of the things that I find really frustrating when conversations tend to start siding over with crowdfunding is being a source of capital, is too many times people will just flippantly say, well, you can just crowdfund it. When startup entrepreneurs really need better feedback than whether or not what they take and put it on Kickstarter or Indiegogo will get funded, a lot of times they need people to be really honest about what they want and how they'll use it, so that when they do put it up on Kickstarter or Indiegogo, it has a much better chance of success, or they'll be able to deliver what they promised. The other thing that I noticed, guys, because this is something I'm constantly getting my shoulder tapped on, is most entrepreneurs aren't marketers. And you really have to be, I wish you didn't, but you really have to be pretty sophisticated in how you put a crowdfunding campaign together now in order just to get people's attention.
True. You are absolutely correct, Michelle.
Well, I know one of the things that we talked about today is each of us was going to bring from some new sources as well as our own perspective of what we thought is happening in the business space with the rapid changes. You know, and it's there's not a day that goes by that any of us, whether it's us or our listeners, are not seeing a news story on how either robots are going to take over a particular segment of business, certain jobs are going to be obsolete, finance is tanking in one area that a lot of people work in. And so I'd be curious to find out from both of you, what did you uncover this morning and what direction did you want to take some of the dialogue? So since we usually go Don first, how about we go Jeff first this time?
Okay, fair enough. I think I'm going optimism today, which maybe isn't always my thing, but I think I'm going on the positive side. Don, where are you going?
I'm Mr. Doom and Gloom.
I just had this weird visual, guys, of Don being over here in like a Batman costume going, yeah, I know, you want it to be great. And Jeff over here being like Captain America, we're going to make it work. Go ahead, Jeff.
Well, on the optimistic side, I don't envision it. I don't know how many listeners have seen the movie WALL-E with Eva, which is a great movie, by the way. But
yeah,
the blubbering, obese humans that kind of slide around on this big ship out in space because the humans destroyed Earth. I hope the destroy Earth part doesn't happen, but I also don't necessarily see that happening with all the robotics that are coming into play. But jumping onto Don's side for a brief second, there will definitely be some jobs and roles that are impacted. But I think on the optimistic side, there are a lot of jobs, tasks, functions that robots will do that humans don't want to do. And I mean, I'll pick three or four right off the top, and there's others in medicine and agriculture, but specifically things like dangerous work. So underwater diving, welding, inspections, underground mining, there's mining accidents that happen all the time. And if a robot get crushed, probably nobody's going to sue. We probably won't have time to talk about robot unions today, but maybe that's a future conversation. That was a joke, by the way. But you never know. If they get truly sentient, maybe they'll organize.
Hey,
but even
watching that new show called Humans, it looks like it's going to be going that way.
That's true. That is true. Well, two more, and I'll jump off and let Don talk. But the other one is nuclear. So the Fukushima incident that happened in Japan, there were site inspections that they literally couldn't send humans into because it was too much of a hot zone with radiation. You can put a robot in there to go do inspections and maybe shut things down. And finally, the last one is, there's definitely been a change in jobs for soldiers, and one of them is going to be bomb discovery and disposal. Again, if a robot gets blown up, sure, it's an expense, but things can be replaced. People can't. So I think dangerous jobs are one of the sort of fastest, easiest, most logical ways for people to kind of get their brain around it going, yeah, people shouldn't or don't want to do that anyway. Of course, there are people that do it today, and on a kind of a secondary topic, we'll talk maybe as we go on about space exploration. And I think there's a human aspect to that people want to do space exploration, but there's a reality aspect that humans can't live for 9 months in the sleep mode. So, Don, take it away on your side, and we'll come back to the optimism side in a bit.
Okay. Well, I agree that robots are going to become a bigger and bigger part of our lives until they reach the point where they are, of course, our overlords and rule everything. I'm ready to submit and subject. I think that's fine. So that day is coming. The change is going to be all over the place. And And change is going to keep on accelerating. I think we're seeing change at a faster pace now than we ever have in human history. And that will keep on accelerating, which is hard to imagine because most of us have a hard enough time keeping up with the change as it is now. To envision it coming even faster is really hard to do. And that presents both opportunities and challenges. On the opportunity side, it means there will be more new technologies to take advantage of from both a consumer perspective and a business perspective. On the downside, every new technology poses a challenge to some kind of old technology. And a lot of businesses that we see today are going to go out of business because of those changes. But between technology changes and societal changes and economic changes, we're looking at threats from Greece, Puerto Rico, other countries in the EU, developing nations, and eventually our own economic situation with our own budget and taxes. There are going to be multiple pressures coming at businesses from all different directions. And that's one of the biggest challenges if you are a CEO or a small business owner trying to keep abreast of all the change that's out there in all these different areas and how that change is going to impact you and your markets and your communities. It's going to get harder and harder to keep up with, and it's going to pose increasing challenges for a business's survival.
You know, there was something that Jeff said, and I wasn't sure if you were going to touch on it in your piece, but I find that it could potentially give us an interesting right corner, and that is, he said, things can be replaced, humans can't. And I wonder if people are really going to continue to hold on to that value in their head when companies are investing in technology, automation, and robotics, there's going to come a point when they're going to think that there's more value in retaining the robot than the human. And I don't mean just in a job. I mean thumbs down.
Well, it's been happening for decades. We don't have, with a few exceptions, full-service gas stations anymore. All the gas station attendants have been replaced with self-serve pumps. And we're seeing that in retail. More and more stores are going to self-checkout lanes, and they can eliminate checkout clerks. In virtually every sector of society, human beings are being replaced with machines, in part because machines make fewer mistakes, but also for a big reason that human beings are expensive and getting more expensive every year. And so as the cost of labor goes up, especially when governments force those wages higher, companies have more incentive to replace human beings with technology, and we're going to see that happening more in the future. That does not bode well for employment or for the economy in general.
Well, the other point I was making was a little more insidious than that. When it comes to the point when you've got robots in charge of making decisions of what is and what is not, we could become dispensable. Just like Jeff thought that, well, you know, if a robot's crushed underwater because they're doing something for us, that's better than losing a life. Well, from our perspective, but maybe not necessarily from the businesses.
True.
Yeah, that's very true.
I think from a financial perspective, and businesses always have those kind of capital investments. I mean, one of the, I think, first to be impacted businesses will be long-haul truckers. And that's a significant investment. Trucks are fairly expensive pieces of equipment. Obviously, they're very heavy and big, and they do a lot of work. And I think one of the probably the initially heavily impacted jobs will be these long-haul truckers. And the truck will still be there, but they're going to spend a significant amount of money, and I don't know whether it's in the hundreds of thousands, maybe millions, to have some automation. But my prediction is, and ironically, I was just driving back from Eastern Washington yesterday, and there were a lot of cars on the road, and I was thinking, man, I cannot wait to embrace my robot overlords. So I know you said that too, Don, and I've actually blogged about it before. I'm looking forward to the day when I can just sort of say, I want to go to fill in the blank, whether it's local or whether it's far away, and a car, a vehicle, a thing, and it won't be a traditional car, because when these automated cars become reality, no one has steering wheels anymore. You can have as I was telling my son yesterday, he said, don't use these words, but I'm going to use them anyway. He said, you could have a trampoline in there and tramp around town. And he goes, don't say that. Too late. Already did. So when he listens to this show, he'll probably chuckle and say, I told you specifically not to say that. But that's what happens when you have kids and you're trying to entertain yourself and them. But my point is, truckers in particular are going to, I think, be initially heavily impacted. The investment for the truck itself isn't going to go away. I don't think we're going to see electric trucks for a while because they have a heavy job, heavy load to carry. And so it's not the EV part of it. It's more the automation part to actually drive and put these trucks in gigantic convoys that are going cross country. But what I do see is, at least for the short term, there'll be humans involved, I suppose literally sitting behind the steering wheel, but also as they get into cities. On an open road, on a relatively open highway, machines and visual tools, so that can basically do machine vision and have some augmented reality or some virtual components in there, can figure out what's happening on the open road. But when you get into a city, there are a lot more decisions to be made. So with all that said, I think there will be an impact on parts of their jobs, but there'll be some that will be less impacted because they'll still be needed in cities. But the irony is, once that truck gets to its destination, it's going to need to be unloaded, and that's going to be more and more automated by robotic devices too. There was a good article a couple weeks ago about Amazon and about one of their warehouses, and then if you saw it as a human, you, especially if you're OCD, you go, holy cow, I can't believe they stacked that stuff up like that. But it wasn't that they were stacked dangerously. They were stacked up for operational efficiency by a robot. No human was involved. It was basically they stacked up things. Not an oven part might be with some other part that goes on a car, which might be maybe with some shoelaces or something. But that's how the system had decided to store them, because it didn't have to have any logic that a human would understand. It just needed logic the machine understood. So I think long-haul truckers will be impacted. When you get into cities, they'll have some human involvement for a while at least. But when they get to the packing plant and the unpacking it and then sort of repacking it back where it's going to go, or whoever bought it, I think that's going to change a lot too. And that was, kind of a long answer. But I think from an impact perspective, jobs will be impacted, not initially on a grand scale, but on the longer scale, we're going to see, and Steve Wozniak, one of the co-founders of Apple, had a great article a couple of weeks ago, and he said that humans will become the pets of robots. And we can talk about that more as we go on.
God. Yeah, because one of the things I'm wondering, Jeff, as we're looking at that, and we're already giving thought to where it's going to happen in what space and in time frame, how are people going to be able to take the opportunity to up-level their skills or find new pockets in which to make themselves useful, especially if they're not privy to some of the change that's going on because they're so busy doing their job where they're at now that there's not as much time, or the companies actually aren't releasing the information till all the choices and the decisions have been made. That definitely puts an interesting bearing on things.
True.
Well, I know one of the things that I pulled up was about a new NBC piece on 9 jobs that humans may lose to robots. And the first one that was on it, I thought, okay, that makes sense. But then it also made me really uncomfortable because I'm thinking to myself, while robots can be programmed to do jobs more efficiently, supposedly not to make mistakes, how would you feel if robots were your pharmacist? What about the fact that there's a possibility for a mistake? Is it going to be any higher in them than it is in humans? Are we being unrealistic in our expectation for how they can perform and how they can't perform? The other one that really, drivers, I think we all get, but the one that kind of threw me as well as pharmacists was lawyers. Now, paralegals I get because they do a different level of the work. That's a lot of knowledge, research, putting things together, writing them, but actually attorneys who are having to argue for things or look at nuances or of a situation or a contract or figuring out how to come to a solution that's best for their client, how's that going to work with a robot? I mean, that really had me kind of baffled. We already get it that store clerks, you know, that'll be done. Even to the point where we kind of get some part of soldiering will be done, but boy, can that bring up a whole new scary way for weird people to take over the world. And even rescuers was one of the jobs, and I thought, okay, I get that. But babysitters, yeah, if I was a mother, I don't care how much they try to indoctrinate our brain with these great TV shows, I would not want to give the care of my child over to a robot because there's too much human imprinting that has to happen for them to be able to grow up making really good and smart decisions. Is that something we really want to turn over to them? So after sharing all of those pieces, what are your thoughts around those particular jobs and are they a thumbs up and thumbs down that we should even care about it?
Well, who wants to go first, Don or Jess?
Oh, go ahead, Don.
Well, one of the dangers there, Michelle, is thinking the way that you're thinking, which is you can't see something happening because you don't like it. And that is a dangerous mindset for anybody in business because the markets dictate what works and what doesn't. And other people might not necessarily share our views. So while I agree with you, Michelle, I would not want to turn my child over to a robot. That doesn't mean that millions of other people would have no problem with it. So that's one of the great challenges for businesses is we tend to get wrapped up in our own ideas, preferences, values, belief systems, and we lose touch with the vast marketplace that doesn't necessarily share those same thoughts and feelings. And that's
well,
why
I
these
agree
changes
with you on that,
will very well occur.
Yeah, it also brings up some really sticky situations when you start talking about, for example, we're going to pick on America because that's where we all are right now. We have a constitution that gives us right to life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. Freedom is a huge thing for Americans. I really see that there's a lot of wonderful things that technology, automation, and robots can bring us in our lives. But my biggest concern is how do we retain freedom as human beings and don't just become a cog in the wheel?
That's going to be a challenge, and it's one that's frequently explored in science fiction novels and movies, is that trade-off between security and freedom. It was one of the themes in in the last Captain America movie. It was one of the themes in iRobot. It's one of the themes in WALL-E. Is what are we willing to trade? To what extent are we willing to trade security for freedom?
Yep, and that's the sort of ever-present challenge is people, and it's been happening forever. And Don, you mentioned Henry Ford quite a while ago. And, I mean, 100 years ago, just barely over 100 years ago, nobody ever thought it was possible to fly. Of course, almost everyone thinks it's quite possible to fly now because they've seen airplanes. But that old line from Isaac, obviously maybe not everybody's seen a plane, but Isaac Asimov said something, I'm going to paraphrase this slightly wrong, but any sufficiently advanced technology is akin to magic. So if you've never seen something happen before, you think, holy cow, that's magic. You took a picture and it just popped out of the thing and now there's me. And obviously you've heard stories of tribes that get sort of freaked out by things like that. But I think technology continues a very rapid pace, and the innovation and iteration is going faster and faster than ever. But I think from using those jobs in particular, the robotic part of the legal part isn't really a robot per se. It's really more machine learning. And that's actually been going on for 10, 15, almost 20 years. In my sort of early jobs, I used to work for a company called Kofax down in Southern California and later for FileNet, which is now part of IBM. And we did we change the names over time because the industry changes, and that's how you keep charging more and more money. But the current buzzword is e-discovery. And the machines, I don't mean like Terminator machines, but the machines can read through documents at an amazingly fast pace with effectively 100% accuracy because it's just bits and bytes. And it can tell the difference between a word and there's a person who invented, the guy that invented Lotus Notes, Ray Ozzie, he and his team built some amazing technology into Lotus Notes back in the early 90s that ironically still some of the tools I use today with Microsoft SharePoint, Microsoft InfoPath, and other tools cannot do. And that is that it's out of the box. It can find a word within, say, six words of another. Find the word Dawn within six words of Michelle, within 10 words of Jeff, as an example. And it would go find things like that. And you might think, what the heck does that have to do with legal? But that's the kind of things that machines can do, especially since it's all in ones and zeros. It can read and process almost anything. A slightly harder one, and this where things like machine vision, so a machine can monitor like a pharmacist. It can, in theory, it has a lot of different vision options. It could be normal sort of human vision, but it could also have stereoscopic 3D vision. It could also have chemical vision, where it's and maybe chemical sensors too. So the chance of making a mistake, and this is, I'm not trying to pick on human pharmacists, I know a few of them, they might take a pill that looks blue and has an R on it or whatever, and see another pill that's maybe purplish blue and has an R on it and go, same thing. And I'm not trying to put these guys in any particular box. I'm just saying a human error can happen just as easily, if not more easily, than with some sort of robotic vision type scenario. But I do agree with you on the babysitter one. I think we need that sort of imprint of humans need to, I think, imprint and bond with humans. But I do see lawyers, it's been happening for a long time. Pharmacists, I see happening more and more. And the one I mentioned earlier with astronauts, I think there's this whole sort of human vision of what we can do and how we explore. And I think we're going to, by default, have to turn some of that over to machines because, I mean, we don't currently have the technology to put somebody in sort of a hypersleep or deep sleep for 9 months while they go to Mars, but we can launch, or we've already done it, we've launched devices to inspect and roam around on Mars, and they can go for years running off solar power on a battery. They don't need food, they don't need heat, they don't need water, they just need the power for their solar cells.
So what do you think then are options that entrepreneurs or even business owners would want to start just thinking along maybe a different pathway or asking themselves some different questions? I mean, who could we pick on really and kind of walk through that process of what their business could look like, what their business looks like today, but what it could look like in 5 years and the different kind of technologies that are coming along that could make it into a totally different product. I think that's where some of the challenge comes for people wanting to be able to shift gears, wanting to be able to move into wherever those new empty pockets are going to be, not knowing what those pockets are. And then how do you ramp people up so that they can slide into those pockets?
Well, that's what Apple did. They started as a computer company and became a music delivery company. So they completely changed their business model, and that model is now under threat. So they may have to change again. So because you're relevant one day does not mean you're relevant the next day. There's a tremendous danger in that.
Well, I think you said you actually found something you wanted to share with us along that line. So go ahead and take the floor, dude.
Well, there's an article in the San Francisco Chronicle last week talking about 10 companies that are likely to go bankrupt in the next year. And it was based on companies' analysis of four critical financial factors. And a lot of them are well-known brands. And some of them, you know, we see that coming, like JCPenney and Sears. They've been in trouble for a while. Others are things like apparel companies, big brands like Quiksilver and Aeropostale, American Apparel, things like Jamba Juice, which is a pretty new company. It's not that old. And it's serving something that we think of as healthy and popular, and yet they're close to dying. A company like Angie's List, which is very, very new, but Angie's List is being threatened from free alternatives on the web. Again, technology killing technology. Angie's List was born of technology, and it's being killed by the same technology that basically birthed it. Rosetta Stone is in trouble, again, because of lots of different alternatives that are defensive or even free. Sprint is in trouble because they can't keep up with the other players in the cell phone industry. And one of the big ones is Groupon, which is barely 2 years old, and yet they're already on the brink of bankruptcy, and they raised more than $1 billion in funding, and they're close to dying. So change, like I said earlier, is happening faster than ever before, and an idea that is hot today can be absolutely stone cold tomorrow. And that is a huge challenge for anybody who's either in business or thinking about starting a business.
You know, as I'm listening to that, Don, I'm reminded of how we tend to address or think about things in the startup community, and that is we shift gears pretty quickly. We test small things and then iterate and then keep pushing forward. And I'm just wondering, what does our thinking, what does our mindset, what are the things that we as humans need to be kind of shifting our own neural pathways in order to allow us to be able to move at a faster speed and a faster pace? Has anybody seen anybody write about that?
If there's been a fair amount of assessment, I'll say futurists and others, but I mean, and so, some of the more realistic ones are going back to your question of how do you stay on top of it, how do you innovate? But if you look at, and his name escapes right now, the guy that came out, Kurzweil, Ray Kurzweil, the whole idea of the singularity, and that's a little far-fetched that people can live to 120 years and beyond, and I don't even know if I'd want to live to 120 years and beyond, but that's a whole other conversation. But what he's talking about, and he's invented some amazing things, like things like the keyboard and other more futuristic things, but what I think is going to need to happen for entrepreneurs is they're going to stay ahead of these curves, where they're going to use the technology that they have today, and they'll also take advantage of things like machine learning. So I shouldn't say picking it, but talking about Microsoft with their Dell technology, which is pretty new, and it does machine learning. It figures out who you talk to in your network, and the whole idea is you work like a network. So I don't think it's going to necessarily take a massive leap from one sort of technology platform to another. I think there's going to be a lot of iteration on top of the existing platforms to build more and more. And if I just pick, I'll pick medicine, agriculture, and I'll say soldiering or the army, those jobs are absolutely going to change. So if you take things like robotic surgery, I it sounds weird to say it, but we've seen it with drone flyers, that some of the best people at doing those jobs are the people that were hardcore video gamers or are hardcore video gamers. And I'm not saying that robotic surgery is a game, and I'm not saying flying a drone is a game. I'm just saying those are the same skill sets, hand-eye coordination, remotely operating something, whether it's a submarine, whether it's a drone, whether it's something else. So I think that's one. And in the agriculture space, it's been in the news for the last couple of weeks, too. There's a good article on CBS News a couple of days back about how in the agriculture space, robotics or GPS, if you really boil it down, has changed the way farming works. And John Deere, as far as I can tell, they're not going out of business because they keep basically getting farmers. And by the way, one gigantic point of this is we're talking about the U.S. because we're in the U.S. today, but we're puny. We're 338 million people. That's nothing compared to the 7 billion people on the planet. So there's what, 20 times, if I'm doing my math right, 20 times more people than we have in our puny little United States. That was my Arnold impression in case I had to explain it. So the U.S., sure, we have a lot of money. We have a lot of innovation. Europe does too. But Africa by 2050 is going to have roughly 2 billion people. And they're going to need farming. They're going to need cell phones. They're going to need some of these things I talked about, these dangerous jobs, you know, working underwater, working on mines, working on different areas. And I'd like to think in the service of humans, meaning that they're going to, I don't know, dig out gold and platinum to build better, faster computers and bigger stuff. But the idea there that I was trying to answer is your point on entrepreneurs and what they need to do is, I think, look beyond what we traditionally look at as, oh, here's what we're doing in the U.S. There's nothing, we're dead, nothing can happen. And some people think that, I don't. But I think that from medicine, even things like I said, robotic surgery, there are a local hospital here, they're on First Hill, and their name escapes me right now, but Swedish hospital has a robotic surgery. And I don't know if they've done it yet, but it has the capability of having a person in some other room, some other town, some other country remotely operating it. So you might have an expert in heart surgery or lung surgery or artery repair, whatever it happens to be. And if they happen to be in India or China or, I suppose, on the space station, they can be operating this device remotely. And I think having not just kids, but anyone learn those skills to understand that, yes, technology will change. Whether they want it to or not, back to Don's point, is technology will change. Our perceptions will have to sort of change along with them. And I think also, we may not think agriculture is sexy, but we still need to feed people. And for the folks that can figure out better ways to plant, process, harvest, and again, I mentioned machine vision earlier, there'll be scientists and engineers that will build out better ways of machine vision, and not with human eyes, but with different types of infrared and different spectra vision to figure out that, is this the right fertilizer for this plant for this particular condition in Africa or China or Vietnam or wherever that farm happens to be. So I went on a long time there, and I apologize, but I think there's a lot of opportunity to take advantage of baby steps or iterative steps of current technologies, and also to take some pretty big leaps by taking advantage of automation to look outside the U.S. and look and see what we can do. And, using kind of a negative one, I just heard yesterday that Ecuador is trying to sell off huge tracts of their forest to China for lumber, which, I mean, we in the U.S. did that with the whole Manifest Destiny thing, so I can't necessarily complain that they're wrong, but maybe there's a better way.
Well, and it's interesting you brought up medicine, because I was just reading a post yesterday. I wish I'd have found it to bring it up today, where there's been a doctor who has come up with a way to use stem cells to help regrow teeth. And, you know, while that might not seem like a big deal, that's a big deal for us to be able to come up with affordable ways for when something happens to us that we can chew and eat food and you know, not be in pain and have better nourishment, or maybe even just feel better because we look better because we're not missing teeth, because they're having so many challenges from the solutions they have available now. And so when you talked earlier about how I'm not sure if I want to live till 120, I'm thinking to myself, I think there's going to be some interesting things that happen in the next 10, 15 years that our vision of what it looks like to be 120 is going to be really, really different.
Well, the reason human beings have come to dominate the planet is because we are inherently creative. And we've gone from hunting and gathering to building actual cities and exploring space, because we're constantly thinking of new ideas. We're constantly creating. And to Jeff's point, we're constantly experimenting. We're trying new things. And one thing that we need to do a better job of is to embrace failure. For anybody in business, embracing failure is absolutely critical, because unless you're willing to fail on small things, you're not going to have that kind of experimentation and that kind of innovation. The vast majority of innovations fail. And you have to do that. You have to fail over and over again in order to find the one thing that does actually succeed. And if you don't do that, then you're condemning your organization to never really grow, to never change, to never have a chance to dominate. So small failures prevent big failures.
When we think about that, do all of us really agree that people haven't been willing to make small failures? Because here's what I notice. I notice when there's a global conversation, it's really, really different from the one-on-one or the one-to-three or the one-to-five conversations. When people really start sharing from an individual perspective, the things that they've done, the things they've tried, where they failed, where they succeeded, there's a lot more people out there doing things and learning and failing than I think gets attention.
I would agree with that. And I think, again, what we said earlier, that's where entrepreneurs come into the picture, that entrepreneurs are the ones willing to experiment and try new things. And the bigger company gets, the less open to that they are, because they become more concerned with, to your point, Michelle, holding on to what they already have. And so they look to squash innovation because they see that innovation as a threat to their core business or their legacy business. So it's a rare company that really explores innovation and embraces failure, like Google or IBM, other companies that actively look to experiment, knowing that most of the experiments will fail, in order to find those few things that are truly world-changing.
So what does that do for the business environment, though, Jeff? Because you're involved, you've been involved in some big companies and startups. So you've been involved in everything from Microsoft all the way down to K2. What do we really, are we delusional in thinking that the ecosystem of business is really going to change? Like nature, isn't there always going to be big animals and little animals and then insects, and that they all have to kind of integrate and live together in order for there to be an ecosystem, period?
Yeah, I think yes. So I think there's a yes and a no there. The yes is that there has to be an ecosystem, and I think a factoid I heard was that the mass of, I think it was just ants, is greater than the mass of all the humans on the planet, and I'm not sure how that actually impacts anything we do, but it was an interesting factoid. But I think from an ecosystem perspective, I don't think I'd go quite so far as getting down to the animals and insect side of it, even though they're part of the ecosystem as a whole. But in business, yes, I think the ecosystem is absolutely changing. One of the things I'm working on this week as I get ready to leave for the largest partner conference in the world, which starts next Sunday, is basically change management. How to understand, evaluate, adapt, and morph to what's happening specifically, in my case, in the Microsoft partner ecosystem. But that's just one segment of it. Don mentioned Google. They have a pretty aggressive and enterprise ecosystem. So does IBM. So does Salesforce.com. And so do a lot of other companies. I think what happens in the background, I'm going to jump back again 100 years, the first iteration of Orville and Wilbur Wright's airplane, as far as I know, didn't fly. But they kept trying. But they were pretty much trying in isolation until they got it right. And apparently there were at least three people on the beach in Kitty Hawk in North Carolina when they took off, because there were two guys running, one guy running down the sand and one guy flying the plane. And somebody must have been taking the picture, or maybe they had some technology we don't know about. But my point of that is, back 100 years ago, I think the scale and scope of innovation was a little bit different. It was more almost about taming the machines. Now, a flash forward 100 plus years where we are today, we're still taming machines, except the machines now are computers that are getting close to thinking as fast as humans. One thing we haven't talked about on this call yet, and I don't know if we want to go into it too deeply, but at least as a data point, is back 100 years ago, why should you or should you not fly? There's probably some argument pro and con back then, and I'm sure various religious organizations had reasons why you should and should not. And maybe the birds had reasons too, but they didn't share those with us. But flash forward today, when you have computers that are getting, like I said, almost sentient, and you know, depending on how you look at sentience, they're pretty darn close to it, the bioethics aspect of it. So now when people are innovating in their closet, just because you can, or in their small workshop, just because they can do something, should they? And it's probably a whole other conversation, but my point there is, there are some things that can happen, not so much from a robotic perspective, but more from a machine learning perspective of maybe I can resequence DNA. And I don't think we're going to see Jurassic Park anytime soon, not the movie, the real thing. But
Rats.
Just because I can resequence DNA, could I, should I? And anyway, the bioethics is a whole other element I think is really important to look at. And that's far afield from your question on ecosystems, but I do think that the ethical aspects of an ecosystem should be involved and included. But to answer your question, ecosystems absolutely are changing. The rate and pace of technological change is, I hate to say it, but far outstripping the rate and pace that humans can currently comprehend it. And we, as humans, need to figure out a way to help others understand that.
Well, when you stop and think of the reason I brought up nature is because we've learned so much from nature, and a lot of times human beings walk around just totally ignorant of it, yet a lot of innovative solutions have come about from when people took the time to observe nature and watch how things work and then apply that knowledge in another area and go, oh, we have a lot to learn from them. And I wonder, because when you made the comment about the factoid of how the mass of ants, well, you know, what came to me when you were talking about that is ants are kind of, we see them sometimes, but most of the time they're unseen. What else is going on for us that's unseen that we can learn from? I think when we ask those kind of questions, we give ourselves an opportunity to open doors we may not have opened, and who knows, it might be the one that helps us to be able to be better change agents.
True.
Well, how did you guys want to wrap up your thoughts around today as far as business, the pace of change? We've talked about how some brands we know who are young as well as old could be irrelevant next week. We've talked about how each industry has an opportunity to grow in really new and unique ways. We've talked about the mindset that everyone has to hold, whether you're an employee inside of a company or you're an entrepreneur. Those are a lot of thought points for people to hold in their mind, as well as to be able to think about, how does this affect the role that I play in business today and what it could end up looking like in 10 years? How did you want to wrap up your summary for today? You go first, Don.
Don?
Okay, well, I think we're all agreed that we're destined to become servants to robots. So there's that. Really, the key is constant innovation. And it is looking at that change and looking for opportunities within that change, because any change presents both threats and opportunities, and it's critical to see both of them. So in what ways can that change negatively impact your business, and in what ways can that change present opportunities for your business? And you need to look at both of those, and that's why I think it was so valuable to have Jeff looking mostly at the positive side, me looking mostly at the negative side. I'm actually an optimist. I really am. But we can't be pure optimists. We have to look at both sides, because if we're only looking at the positives, then we miss the dangers that are there and that can doom us. And Dino Dogan said something on a show a year or two ago that I was on with him, and I still remember it. He said that at Triber, Dino looks for ways to put his own company out of business. So he's actively brainstorming threats that may or may not exist yet so that he can respond to them. So he's actually innovating by looking at what his potential weaknesses are or what potential threats could be out there. And I think we need to do more of that. So look at the changes out there and think, how can this negatively impact us? And how could this positively impact? And be willing to let go of not only what doesn't work, but let go of what does work. Just because what does work now might not work next year or next month. And you have to be willing to let go of that to embrace what else is new.
And I think what's going to happen on some – sorry, go ahead, Michelle.
I said, what about you, Jeff?
as a pile on to what Don said, I think what is happening is there are things that are happening in the background on the sidelines, and there are a few companies that allow for and encourage innovation. I mean, there are only, you mentioned a few companies, IBM, Microsoft, Google, I think Apple is a lot less these days, but they invest billions of dollars into research. And in one sense, it's to preserve the status quo, because, of course, they want to continue selling their own business. But as Don mentioned, Apple converted itself from a PC company that was failing, which ironically got a big investment from Microsoft back about 15-18 years ago, that saved them. But that's, again, a whole other conversation. But that was actually a smart move on the part of Bill Gates to do that. Otherwise, the antitrust stuff would have been much, much worse. But a lot of companies are investing in preserving the status quo with a veneer for the most part for innovation, but there are a lot of people in closets and garages. I think we're never going to see the end of the entrepreneur, the Steve Jobs and Wozniaks in their garage, the Bill Hewlett and Bill Packard in their garage, and various other people that have built ideas. Maybe now it'll be at a coffee shop, but I don't think we're going to see the end of innovation and or iteration. But I think going back to the kind of the crux of this conversation about robots or devices taking over, it's going to happen. I mean, I as I mentioned before, and I've blogged about it before, I actually look forward to the day when I can text or tweet or whatever, communicate, and a vehicle will just show up. And if I need to take two people, a two-person car will show up. If I need to take 25 people, a 25-person vehicle will show up, and it will just get me there. I'm looking forward to that. But the short term on jobs, I think it's going to be those dangerous jobs are going to be taken over by robots. That's a good thing. Less human lives in danger. I think I mentioned the long-haul truckers will be impacted, packing industry, warehouses, and especially soldiers. There's a couple of books I've read by the same author, and he said two things. One is the next war, and I don't remember his name off the top of my head, but the next war will be over water, which I don't think surprises anybody. And then the one beyond that will actually be fought with robots. So that's an interesting perspective. And the number one challenge he envisions for a robot war is, where do they get their power from? And again, maybe a topic of another conversation. But I think in one thing we have to look at, and Don kind of alluded to it, is we have to watch for the law of unintended consequences. So as we make these sort of grandiose changes of a car driving a vehicle to maybe deliver my coffee or maybe deliver my kid or do whatever I want to do with them, what other things are impacted by that? We have to look around the corners, and I think to Dino's point of brainstorming threats, it's how do you innovate on your weaknesses, but I think also how do you innovate on your strengths? And I think there's going to be a lot of opportunity there to help existing industries to make that transition. So that whole manage change management, which is, of course, the same thing backwards, but change management perspective, helping industries and also helping the people that work in those industries, and also helping these millennials and Gen Zs as they come up through the ranks of, I don't think there will be any more ranks of the traditional office worker. My prediction is we'll have and I think we've seen this coming for years, is we'll have a series of entrepreneurs, our careers, I should say, or I'll say my kids' careers, will be a series of entrepreneurial engagements, 6 months, 12 months, maybe 24 months, but I don't see that we're going to have a whole lot of people that work for companies for 20 or 30 years anymore. And I don't think that's massively impacted by robots per se, at least on the grand scheme, but it will absolutely be a factor. So by having robotics and having artificial intelligence and augmented reality and virtual reality, haptic gloves, machine vision, some of these things that will make it possible to do a heck of a lot more from one specific location than we've ever been able to do before will allow for a lot more jobs than we're thinking of. They'll just be very different than what they've been in the past.
You know, one of the things that I'd like to summarize thoughts from today are along two lines. I totally agree with you guys about the ethics of innovation, that people really need to make sure that they're very conscious and intentional of that. It's going to be interesting to see how those are handled. Is that something that's going to be handled from a small body of people and everyone agrees? Are we going to assume everyone's going to operate from the same space because we know humans don't do that? I mean, how that comes about and how it ends up helping us is going to be interesting to watch how that unfolds. The other thing that I think too many times people don't talk about is I think we have an opportunity to ask ourselves, with technology moving as quick as it is, and we're seeing it across multiple industries, how can we, as humans, use technology to help us become better human beings? How can we, you know, it's like, yes, there's machine learning and they can think faster than us, but what are we going to do to improve our own lives? Because I think one of the things that we've recognized over time is anytime you do something to improve human life, it takes us to another level of living, thinking, being. It gives us opportunities that we would not have thought of before. So what happens if we become human 2.0 or human 3.0 versus who we are today? What kind of life would we live, as well as maybe what kind of things would we be able to create? Because as Dawn has said earlier, one of the things that's really separated humans is that we're constantly creating things. So how do our creative abilities shift and change and morph when we use technology to live a better life? I've always believed that anytime you do something like that, when you master something or up-level a skill, whether it's personal development, whether it's your brain power, whether it's how you physically are able to be stronger, it opens unknown doors. Those doors remain unknown till you get to that level. And then once you're at that level, all of a sudden you see things totally differently. And I think that's where we're going to find humans are going to start having an opportunity to co-create a totally different kind of world with machines. So it'll be fascinating to see what it looks like.
It really will be.
I agree.
Well, one of the things I wanted to ask you guys before we shifted to closing the show today, first I want to thank you for agreeing to do a special edition, because it takes a little more time on our guest host part when they agree to do that. You know, they're not coming in and just doing their piece, and so we always appreciate the fact that you guys invest that time for listeners. I'd be curious to ask you, now that we've talked about this, is it going to change what you thought your next topic was going to be for August? What about you, Dawn? Are you thinking maybe our conversation today might cause you to bring a totally different topic to August than you had previously thought of?
Now that you mentioned it, yeah. Yeah, I'm going to think about what we've been talking about today and see how I can integrate it for next month.
What about you, Jeff?
Yes, it definitely causes, because other transition stuff that's going on now, I'm looking at a big aspect is around change management. So I'm thinking of how not just robotics and artificial intelligence and machine learning will help change those things, but yeah, it tweaked my thinking about what I'm going to talk about.
Mm. Well, and that's what I'm hoping happens for listeners as well. Our conversation today is starting to tweak their thinking, and you know, that's how really cool things come about. Everybody gets on a different path, and they're operating it in a totally different level. And then all of a sudden, it's like boom, boom, boom. Some really cool things come out of it. So I think that's really what it means to learn how to master the inner and outer game of business. And boy, do we have a great opportunity to see what that could look like in the next year. So thank you guys for doing a totally different kind of conversation today. We appreciate it.
Well, it was fun. Thanks for coming up with it. It was a great idea and it was fun.
Well, I will talk to you both, Dawn and Jeff, in August. Of course, I'll talk to you in between, but you know what I mean.
Sounds good.
Well, remember, you can share today's show by going to www.whoismichelleprice.com. Again, that's whoismichelleprice.com. And, you know, we have a lot of fun tweeting and talking on Facebook, G+, LinkedIn, using our hashtag BBS Radio. And that hashtag helps everyone to find the aggregate of the conversation. I want to invite your fellow, I want to ask you to invite your fellow entrepreneurs and startup community members next week to tune in as we discuss our continuous conversation with Anthony Covington and I around how to build a sustainable startup community. I think actually what happened in some of the dialogue today will have an effect on how Anthony and I kind of bring this back around. Remember, we took that special segment we did where we talked about all the different pieces, and then each month we're taking a piece out of that conversation and going a little deeper. But I think we're going to have to tell Anthony to tune in and listen to our dialogue today, because it's definitely sparking some additional ideas in my head of how we can bring some additional content to how to build a sustainable startup community. And of course, today, like always, you have the opportunity to ask your questions all week long on Twitter using the hashtag VBS Radio. And we really do take your feedback seriously. It's really important to us. It's allowed us to go out and get some specific guests on the show, because I can send them in an email tweets and show them your interest in hearing from them, because the intention has always been to bring you guests each week that expand your knowledge and inspire your actions to grow your business. And so to accomplish that, it's benefited us to hear what you've liked, what you didn't like, which topics you're enjoying, which ones you want to learn more about, who we need to bring on we haven't had on yet, who you want us to bring back. And I get it that some of you love to tell us in the social platforms about that, Twitter, Facebook, G+, LinkedIn, and I get it that some of you would prefer to also send those requests in an email. So this is that one time I give you that email address so you can do so. TheBreakthroughSpecialist@gmail.com. Again, that's TheBreakthroughSpecialist@gmail.com. And, you know, thanks for visiting, and I want to invite you to check out additional episodes on Breakthrough Radio. You can just click on the Listen Now button, or you can click on the blog in our navigation, and it will show you all of the different radio episodes that we have every first Monday of the, well, actually every Monday of the week. I'm starting to, maybe I need another cup of coffee today. So I did want to give you a quick heads up. Our next episode, we're bringing you Jeannie Bliss, who has written a really awesome book called The Chief Customer Officer 2.0, How to Build Your Customer-Driven Growth Engine. You are going to love this conversation, I'm promising you. So make sure you either set time aside to listen to us live, or make note when we're tweeting with our hashtag so that you can listen at your convenience on our recording. I want to thank you for tuning in with us today. I hope you had a wonderful 4th of July for those of you in the United States. And, of course, for our global listeners, we appreciate and love it when you let us know what's going on in your part of the world. This is Michelle Price here with the Breakthrough Radio, delivering you the best of business minds each Monday live. I'm coming to you from the Third Coast of Houston, Texas, where we work with you, a business down the street or around the world, to tell your dynamic story, attracting your ideal customers. Talk to you next Monday.